Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, adventure. Later in the hour, we'll be on the high seas with the voyage of the Scarlet Queen, but right now, it's Dangerous Assignment. Originally starring Brian Dunleavy on the on-air version, the syndicated program featured Lloyd Burrell in the title role. The story first heard on NBC on May 24, 1950.
Baghdad, Martinique, Singapore. At all the places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though. Trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's gonna prove you can sometimes hook the biggest fish of all right in the middle of a freight train. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me.
Steve, ever been on the road to Mandalay?
Many times. Vocally, that is. Used to be the theme song of our jolly fellows clam digging and marching society.
Well, this time you're actually going to travel that road, Steve. On your way to meet an American newspaper man named Forrester.
What's it all about, Commissioner?
Lately, we've been concerned over the leak of strategic materials and equipment from this country. Materials originally intended for Indochina, Malaya.
You mean some of that equipment isn't getting there, huh?
Right. It's winding up in Burma, then being shipped on through the back door of China.
So how does this newspaper man fit into the picture?
Chris Forrester knows the Orient. He's been there for years, has many contacts. He got in touch with us last night, said he had certain information which might help us plug up that leak of supplies.
Okay, Commissioner.
Get over there, Steve. Talk with Forrester. Get to the organization behind all this and smash it. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Hit the road to Mandalay. Check with a foreign correspondent there named Chris Forrester and hope the information he has will help us plug up the leak of strategic materials and equipment. It's late Friday evening when my plane settles down in Rangoon. I check in at the Strand Hotel, but Forrester hasn't arrived. Seems the train from Mandalay is overdue. I head for the depot, and that's when I spot the gent in the white suit tailing me. The same gent who was standing near the hotel desk when I asked about Forrester. I try a fast maneuver to shake him. Clever ruse number 37B. And it works. I wind up on the main street again and hail an approaching cab. Then, as I open the door, I realize clever ruse number 37B isn't so clever. The gent in the white suit is sitting in the back seat of the cab, and somehow I feel it wouldn't be smart to turn down its invitation.
Do get in, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay. Pretty fast on your feet, aren't you?
I think so. All right, driver. Now, I'd like to have a little talk with you, Mitchell.
Friendly talk?
But of course.
I might believe it if you took that hand out of your coat pocket.
May I ask what you want with Chris Forrester?
You may. Only I don't think you're going to get an answer.
In that case, your identification papers, please. Come, come, Mr. Mitchell.
Here you are.
Thank you. Oh, I see. My apologies, Mr. Mitchell.
What's this all about?
Perhaps you'd best look at my credentials. There you are.
Ben Grayson. Chief Investigator, Southeast India Insurance Company, Melbourne.
You see, Mr. Mitchell, my company is interested in Forrester, too, in the work he's doing. We wouldn't want anything to happen to him. We're counting on him for some very valuable information. Oh? And we're willing to pay for it. As a matter of fact, I have a check in my pocket for him. £2,000, a small bonus.
And this information is in regard to...
the hijacking of freight insured by our company. We handle a good many firms in this area, Mr. Mitchell, and the company's been taking an awful beating in the past 6 months. The bosses have been on my neck, wanting me to do something about the situation.
Job hanging by a thread?
No, not exactly, but it does make a chap look bad, doesn't it? Well, I've had some luck. Picked up a few operators, small fry, bush league pirates and the like. Forrester seems to be on the right trail, though. He's after the big wheel, the power behind a gigantic organization operating in this area. Well,
that's why I'm here, Grayson.
Well, as they say, glad to have you aboard.
Ten minutes later, we pull up at the railway station. While Grayson goes off to inquire about Forrester's train, I take a quick stroll around the depot. Seems to be an awful lot of activity about for this time of night. A lot of people milling around, workmen mostly, and two platoons of government troops are headed along the loading platform. I watch as they pile aboard the waiting train.
Steve? Steve?
Yeah, what is it, Grayson?
Trouble. Plenty of it. The night train from Mandalay, the one Forrester was on.
What about it?
Guerrillas attacked it 30 miles out of Centeio, derailed it.
What?
Robbed the passengers, left three of them dead.
Oh, great.
The report didn't say who they were. Do you think one of them might be Forrester?
Well, let's find out. This, I take it, is the relief train?
Yes, leaving in a few minutes.
Okay, let's latch on. Grayson and I are aboard as the relief train pulls out of the depot, picks up speed, rolls northward toward Mandalay. Hours later, we watch the dawn come up, not across any bay, and not like thunder, but quietly, hot, sticky. Then finally, we arrive at the scene of the wreck. The locomotive, looking like a wounded bull elephant, lies sprawled across the tracks. Behind it, two passenger cars form a neat pagoda. First, we check the casualties. Two of them are natives. The third is the engineer. Grayson and I split up, start checking the passengers lined up on both sides of the track. No sign of Forrester. No one seems to remember it. That is, until I reach a short, heavy-set gent sporting an expensive, though badly wrinkled, tan gabardine suit.
The American chap, you say? Tall, graying about the temples? Oh, yes. It seems to me, his name was,
Forrester.
Oh, yes. We were in the same car. Spoke with him briefly.
Do you know where he is?
No. Should be about somewhere close by.
When did you see him last?
Oh, some time ago, before the attack, that is. Got into a small conversation with him regarding bicycles. I represent the Birmingham Thunderbolt. Excellent wheel, sir. Stout little machine and all that.
I'm sure. Thanks for
that. Oh, one moment, sir. Oh, Tala, would you pop over a moment, please? She might be able to help you, sir. Lovely girl, lovely. From Singapore. Don't know what she does, but whatever it is, she must do it well.
Yes. What is it, Mr. Perryman?
Oh, my dear. Gentlemen, I didn't get the names, huh?
Steve Mitchell.
Tala, Mr. Mitchell. My name is Perryman. Andrew.
How do you do, Mr. Mitchell?
Hi.
He's looking for a chap, friend of his, Forrester.
Oh, yes. The newspaper writer. A most charming gentleman.
Oh, quite. The point is, have you seen him?
Why, no, I haven't.
You a friend of his, too?
We met on the train.
He did off rather well, eh, Maria?
Merely a pleasant conversation.
You were with him when the guerrillas attacked the train?
Yes. We heard shots, and then the train stopped suddenly. There was great confusion.
And Forrester, what happened to him?
I do not know. In all the excitement, he just vanished.
He could have got off the train, you think?
Yes. I thought of doing the same. Started to, but the rebels suddenly appeared and forced us to remain in the car.
Ghastly lot they were. I know a smattering of the Karen dialect. Managed to catch part of their conversation. I got the impression they were looking for someone in our car.
Yeah. Could be, Mr. Perryman. Could be. Thanks.
Steve? Oh, Steve.
Oh, Grayson. Been looking for you.
I haven't had a bit of luck. How about you?
I haven't found Forrester, but I think I'm on to something.
Oh?
I've been talking with a couple of passengers who were in Forrester's car. I've got an idea. He skipped out.
What?
Yeah.
I think he knew it was something more than just a raid to grab supplies, that the guerrillas were after him, too.
So assuming Forrester ducked off this train...
He's probably out there somewhere, hiding in the jungle. Or if there's a village nearby, he might be headed for it. Let's find out. We do some fast checking. We find out that there is a village not too far away. We also find a native who will lead me through the jungle to it. Grayson stays on at the scene of the train wreck in the event that Forrester doubles back. I follow my native guide into the jungle. We don't get very far before we run into someone else on the trail.
Good morning.
Morning. You, lost?
Lost? Oh, but no. I was just out for a stroll. I understand it will be some time before the train is ready to take us on to Rangoon.
That's right. You were one of the passengers?
Yeah. My name is Herstal. August Herstal. I have a plantation near Mandalay. And you, my dear?
Oh, just a tourist. Name's Mitchell.
I see. And you, too, wish to stretch your legs, huh? The train ride is a tiring one, is it not?
Yeah.
I was about to return to the train. Shall we go back together?
Oh, no. My friend and I will push on a little further.
A word of caution, gentlemen. Do not venture too far. The jungle is treacherous.
Thanks for the advice, Herstal. We'll be careful. The slight bow from the waist, Herstal turns, walks down the trail, and disappears from view. The guide and I push on, and the jungle gets thicker, the going rougher. Finally, I call a halt.
Why you want to stop? The village is only...
Just pipe down for a minute, Buster, and listen.
A bird of the jungle.
Anything else?
I do not hear it now. But before, I think there's somebody else on the trail.
Yeah, somewhere behind us, following us.
You stay here. I will go back and see.
No, you keep going along the trail and make some noise about it. I'll wait here.
Okay, you boss.
I ease off the trail and wait. I can hear the guide moving up ahead in the jungle. Then it's quiet. 5 minutes go by. 10. Nothing happens. I slip out of my hiding place, take off after the guide. I find him about 200 yards down the trail. He's dangling from the branch of a tree with a noose of vines around his neck. And he's dead. Cut the guide's body down from the noose of vines and bend over him. I bend just in time. Blood whistles over my back. I dive into the brush and hug the ground. No sign of the sniper anywhere. That's just the way I want to keep it. I circle on all fours toward the trail. Finally reach it. Take off in the direction the guide has told me the village is. Half an hour later, I reach the river. I start along the bank. Then I spot somebody kneeling by the edge. I ease up quickly. Sorry to startle you. I wasn't sure who it was. Doing the weekly washing?
Yes.
Look, Miss...
I am Anine.
Well, maybe you can help me, Anine. Have you seen a tall American around here lately? His name is Forrester.
No. There has been no American. But some guerrillas passed by here.
Guerrillas? How long ago?
Only a short while.
Probably beating the brush for Forrester. Well, this is just great. I've got guerrillas ahead of me and guerrillas behind me. The sniper was one of the passengers from the train.
What?
Oh, skip it. Which way is the village from here?
That way.
Okay, I'll...
What is it?
Nothing. Thanks for the information. Out of her sight, then I stop. Anina's given me more information than she realizes. In her pile of washing, I spot the cuff of a man's white shirt, and it doesn't look like the native type. I wait. Pretty soon, she comes along the trail, looking back to see if she's followed. I keep in the brush to one side of the trail and stay with her. She leads me to a hut, half hidden in the underbrush, and disappears inside. I wait a while. Then I pop in after her. A tall blonde guy stretched out on the mat sits up fast. Hey!
He is the one I was telling you about.
Relax, Forrester.
Who are you?
Steve Mitchell, the guy who was supposed to meet you. Here's my credentials, Forrester.
Huh? Oh, brother, am I glad to see you. How'd you find me?
Spotted your shirt and the girl's washing.
She was trying to get the blood out of it.
Shoulder wound, huh?
Yeah, but not bad.
From the guerrillas?
Mm-hmm. When they jumped the train. I had a hunch they were after me as well as the supplies on the train, so when they raided it, I took off fast. That's when I collected the slug. They followed me, but the girl here hid me and patched me up. I guess she thought you were after me, too.
I did not know who you were.
Forrester, those people who got friendly with you on the train.
Perryman?
And the girl, Tava. Either one of them could have been planted there to put the finger on you for the guerrillas.
Yeah. That thought occurred to me, too, when I was on the run.
Or it might have been Herstal.
Who?
I ran into him in the jungle near the train. Said he was one of the passengers out for a walk. Remember meeting him on the train?
No.
Well, one thing's sure, we've got to get you out of here and back to the train fast.
In the village, one of the men have a small boat. I will go and talk to him. I am certain he will help.
We head downriver away and then double over to the train, huh?
Yes. The guerrillas do not bother with native boatmen, and you can both hide in the bottom under some covers. You remember the place at the river where I was washing clothes, Mr. Mitchell? Wait for me there.
Here's the spot Anine wants us to wait for, Forrester.
Good. It didn't come any too soon.
Look, just in case we get separated, you better give me what information you have on this hijacking racket.
Right. The head man's a guy the natives call Lokai, but he's a white man.
Huh?
He's the string that holds it all together. Without him, it'd collapse.
Do you know who this Lokai is?
3 nights ago, I got a quick glimpse of him in Mandalay at a payoff. They spotted me, and I had to get away fast. But I'd recognize him if I ever saw him again.
No wonder he's trying his best to have you knocked off. How does the racket work?
Well, the hijacked supplies and munitions are recreated and reshipped to dummy addressees on the coast of Burma. Non-existent planters, exporters, etc.
I see. And then what?
It's hauled across Burma to Mandalay and then flown by a chartered plane into China. He has no trouble with the local rebels because he pays them off and they leave his shipments alone.
Sounds like that'd take a lot of dough.
Lokai doesn't use money. He pays them off in foodstuffs. That causes a food shortage in the big cities, so then he runs a black market.
Brother, he works all the angles, doesn't he?
Sure. For instance, 2 weeks ago when the rebels blew up the water pipes that supply Rangoon, Lokai's boys moved in fast and did a big business selling water at so many annos a bucket.
This is one smart fellow we're talking about. Well, at least when we get back to the relief train, you can trade your information for £2,000, that insurance investigator.
Grayson? Yeah, I talked to him a couple of times last week in Mandalay. I guess he's on a spot with his company until his thing's cleared up. Well, I can sure use the dough.
Hold it.
Hmm?
On the river, just coming around the bend.
Small boat. That's Arneen in it, wearing men's clothes.
Yes, so it is. I wonder what happened to the boatman.
This is as close as I can come to the bank.
Okay. Let's go. Where's the boatman, Arneen?
He was sick, so he told me to take the boat.
I see. Here, Forrester, I'll give you a hand aboard.
Thanks.
Okay.
You had better get under the tarpaulin near the bow.
Right.
Stay under cover. There are many guerrillas in the area.
Right. There, that ought to hide us. We can see out of this torn place. Forrester.
Yeah?
She sure seems cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little too much so.
The price in your head is as high as I think it is. She may be trying to collect it herself.
Mm-hmm. Maybe by taking us to the local guerrilla chief, Tuan Ko.
Just the same, we'd better play along for the time being. This boat's our best chance of getting out of here.
Yeah.
Hey, get down. Boat over there near the other side of the bank. Three natives in it.
Guerrillas.
On board, land aboard, huh? How are you, Flanco?
Ma'am, none the boo.
Flanco,
Flanco, Nam, none the boo.
Great.
You understand any of it?
Enough to tell me who our friend Armin is.
Oh?
I told you the local guerrilla chief was Twanko. She's his sister.
What? Look, that other boat's out of sight. Let's get out of here before...
Steve, up ahead. That native bridge across the river.
Three guys perched up there with Tommy guns. And those boats on the bank. I think we're being taken to guerrilla headquarters. Yeah. Looks like we've drifted right into a nice little trap. I start to crawl out from under the top so I can grab the helm. But just as I stick my head out, something very hard hits me over the ear.
And I fall. You okay, Steve?
What? Oh, Forrester. Where are we?
Safely downstream, almost to the place where we get off.
What? Hey, what happened? The last I remember...
You got hit on the head. Arneen, you better fill him in.
I saw you start to crawl out from under the tarpaulin, Mr. Mitchell. I was afraid you would do something rash, so I hit you with this wrench to prevent them from seeing you.
You sure pack a mean wallop. Then you weren't going to turn us into the guerrillas.
Oh, no. It is true my brother is their leader, but it is also true I am opposed to what he is doing. I too wish freedom for my country, but not his way. And not when it means kidnapping and murder. I remember the war. There was so much bloodshed then.
You've got a good memory, Arneen. A lot better than most these days. Thanks. A couple of minutes later, she pulls the boat over to the bank and lets us out. We head through the brush in the direction of the train and Grayson.
It can't be far, Steve.
Pretty soon we spot it. They've hooked the passenger cars on behind the relief train. Then I see Perriman, Tava, and Herstal climb aboard one of the cars. We stay out of their sight. Any one of them could be the one who put the finger on Forrester.
Starting up.
We try to hurry, but Forrester's boom slows him down. I put him across my shoulders in a fireman's carry and take off after the train. And then I spot Grayson on a flat car on which a crane is mounted.
Hurry, Mitchell!
I come up beside the flat car, roll Forrester onto it, drive aboard!
Good show, old boy.
Oh, for a minute, Grayson, I thought we would... Hey, why the gun?
Mitchell, don't you know who this is?
Sure, it's Grayson.
This is Lokai, boss of the hijacking racket.
What? Quite right. Look, Forrester, you told me you talked to Grayson a couple of times last week. How come you didn't recognize him as Lokai then?
I talked to him on the phone.
Oh, great. Great is right. I'm quite indebted to you, Mitchell, for dropping Forrester right into my lap. Now I can get both of you out of my hair at the same time. My eyes flick up at the crane hanging overhead, then at the cable which leads down to the big hook resting on a box behind me. If I can get hold of it, it's our only chance. But Grayson is raising his gun, aiming right at me. Can't move quickly enough to do anything. But Forrester has been watching me, guessing what's in my mind. He moves slowly along the floor, reaches out suddenly, and grabs Grayson's leg. It isn't enough to topple a man, but it gives me that split second I need. I grab the hook, yank, and then jump aside as it swings past, catching Grayson. Thanks, pal.
Brother, he's out like a light.
Put out of business in more ways than one.
Quite an act he was putting on, the hard-working insurance investigator.
Yeah, it was quite an act, until it got broken up. Or rather, until he got the hook.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell.
Dangerous Assignment, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from May 24th, 1950. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. And if you are a listener in the greater Los Angeles area, on the night of February 25th, 1948, you could have tuned in to the Wordplay show Webster Says on KFI, the Parade of Hits on KMPC, the action-adventure show The Clock on KECA, or the music program Club 15 on KNX, or tuned in to mutual radio affiliate KHJ for The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, heard at 8:30. We'll hear that very broadcast now, called Winchester Rifle and the Ambitious Groom, starring Edwin Max and Elliot Lewis.
Entry, The Catch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 3 degrees, 7 minutes north, 104 degrees, 2 minutes east. Wind fresh to moderate, sky fair. Remarks, departed Singapore after being guest at unsuccessful wedding. Reason for failure, the Winchester rifle and the ambitious groom. It was a sun-brilliant, wind-fresh morning when we stood into Koh Phang on the island of Timor, our port of call after a long run up from Sydney. The stevedores were waiting for us as we warped into the Nederlander Asiatic Company's docks. And by the time the Scarlet Queen was riding to her hawsers, our cargo was swinging out over the side, guided by the gentle hand of my chief mate, Gallagher.
Let's be easy on that gear, Blackton!
A few moments later, a portly messenger waddled aboard the Queen.
You are Captain Kearney, yeah?
Yeah.
I have a cable for you from Singapore, yeah?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
The cable was from the Singapore offices of Kang and Sons China Traders, the company under which the Scarlet Queen had set out on her voyage and under which we were still sailing. But the cable didn't have to do with business affairs. Hey, Gallagher, come here.
Yeah, what's up?
Just get that stuff off in a hurry. You and I are going to a wedding.
We're going to a what?
Hey, look, the address to you and me says, my son, request the honor of your presence at the marriage between my daughter, Nanhua, and the Honorable Yu Lang at my home on the 26th instant. Affectionately, Coochie Kang.
Nanhua.
Yeah. Come on, let's get moving, shall we?
Watch me move cargo. I'd miss your wedding before I'd miss hers.
I want 3 more rip balloons, 3 more soft rides, or 3 holes in less than an hour.
The ceremony at Kang's house was a success. Everything fit, except the expression on Nanhua's face. It should have been happy, but it wasn't. Red and I followed the crowd out onto the street. The bride and groom appeared in the doorway, and the ever-present Chinese firecrackers started popping.
What's the matter with Nanhua? Skipper, everybody's happy but her.
I've been wondering, too, Red. I don't know. The scene of gaiety suddenly changed. Yu Lang and the groom stiffened and crumpled at the screaming Nanhua's feet. By the time we got to him, he was dead. When we rolled him over, we saw a bullet hole in his forehead, just over his right eye.
So Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Thank you.
Phil, what happened? He was standing.
I don't know, Nanua. We'll try to find out. Take her inside, Red. Get her someplace where it isn't so noisy.
Yeah, come on, Nanua. Let's go inside. Come on, where your friend can't see your ball.
Oh, boy, how? Why would she, Captain? He shot. Tuanga?
Yeah, all finished.
Other man, Lee Chen Si, he shoot, I think.
Who's Lee Chen Si?
He outside from Nan Hua. She married this man. He talk hate on this man. Now much sorrow he do. I call Xiong Jin.
Police, yeah. Somebody should call police.
Philip, my son, I was inside. What is it?
Afraid it couldn't be worse, Kang. He's dead.
I was told that, Philip. But how?
Somebody used the noise of the firecrackers to cover the sound of the shot.
How could it be, my son, such sadness in a night so recently noisy with happiness?
I don't know, Kang. I don't know.
Good Lord, what's happened to Liu Yang? I saw him dead. He's been shot.
Yes, Ralph.
Tell me, what in heaven's name happened?
This is Ralph Clayton, Philip, my assistant here in Singapore.
Hello, Mr. Clayton.
This is Captain Carney, Ralph. I think he knows more than anyone about what happened.
I don't know anything. I just saw him fall. Kang.
Yes?
Who owns that house across the street?
Why, an aged one named Guo Feng, Philip.
Huh? I'll see you in a few minutes. I'm going to cross and take a look at that house and see if I can find Guo Feng. I didn't find Guo Feng. The house was dark and nobody answered my knock. I forced my way in. I climbed to the second floor. The two front rooms looked out across the now deserted street toward Kang's doorway, in which Nanhua and her groom had been standing. I didn't go any farther than the first room. A faint smell of powder smoke still hung in the hot air. I lit a match. In a corner, I found an ejected rifle cartridge case, American brand 38 Special. I slipped it into my pocket and left the house.
Philip, my son, did you see Guo Feng?
No, Kang, there wasn't anybody home.
Did you find anything in the house, Captain Carney?
Yeah, Clayton. The shot was fired from an upstairs room by an American rifle, 38 caliber.
Really?
An auto-loading weapon, I think.
Why do you say that, Captain Carney?
Because if it were bolt or lever action, I don't think the killer would have ejected the shell. With an auto, he couldn't help it and probably wouldn't have wasted the time looking for it. It was pretty dark in there.
I see.
Well, I'll get back and check on Guo Feng later. The policeman called?
Yes, Philip. I myself called him.
Well, you've done everything you can, Kang. I'll probably want to ask you some questions. You better go and try to rest until I get here.
Red?
Oh, where the devil have you been, Skipper? You know I'm no good with women who are going to pieces.
How is she?
How do you think she is? She's better than she was, though. She's in there in the other room laying down. Say, Skipper.
Huh?
Who is Lee Chen Si?
Why?
Well, she's been talking about him, about how he's got to get away.
Yeah. He's some guy who wasn't in favor of her marrying Yu Lang.
Huh.
I'll tell you more after I've talked to her. Wait here.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Nanhua. Kind of a rough sea tonight, huh?
Yes, it is.
But rougher for Yu Lang than for anyone else, don't you think?
I'm not feeling sorry for myself. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, that's what I meant. I wanted to remind you that you weren't because I want to talk to you about it.
I'm all right, Phil. I want to talk about it.
Good. Who is Lee Chen Si?
Is he suspected already?
No, I'm afraid he is. Did he do it, Nanhua?
No. Of course he did not.
Why was he the first one to be suspected?
Because he is so quick with his temper and so sincere when he is angry. He threatened that he would kill Yu Lang.
Why? Because he wanted to marry her?
Yes, that is why.
That's a point in his favor. Look, Nanhua, I...
Yes, Phil?
Both Red and I realized that you weren't happy tonight. I'm not going to ask you why you were going through a marriage that you didn't want.
Because I am Chinese, I could not tell you if you did ask, Phil.
Yeah, I sort of figured that.
But, Phil, because Lee is Chinese and his friends are Chinese, no one will turn to help him. He will be arrested for a crime he had nothing to do with. The justice here in Singapore moves very rapidly. Phil, I am sure that he is innocent. He must be warned and...
And kept out of sight someplace?
Yes.
All right, Nanwa. I haven't met many women I could believe, but you're one I can. Where will I find your Lee Chen Si?
Oh, Phil. I am not sure. But if you will go to his uncle, he's an old man, Kuan Yin. He has a druggist shop near the end of Tang Ming Road. Perhaps Kuan Yin will know where he is. Here, take this clasp, that he will know you are to be trusted.
Okay, Nanwa. Red will go with me. Don't tell anybody where we've gone, even your father. He's too honest.
All right, Phil.
Your story to everyone is that we just left and said we'll see you later. Which we will. Red and I swung down toward the end of Tanglin Road, a street typically noisy and crowded. Kuan Yin's apothecary was dimly lit and filled by the odors of the strange and nameless things prescribed to maintain the Chinese health. A wizened little figure stood up behind a counter as we went in.
Yes? You wish Chinese medicine?
No, thanks, Doc.
Red, we're looking for Lee Chen Si. Nanhua told us you might know where he is.
Oh, no. I not know.
Kuan Yin, we friend with Nanhua. She friend with Lee Chen Si.
I not know where Lee Chen Si.
Here, clasp Nanhua send to show we friend.
Oh. Why you come?
To help Lee. He in big trouble. You hear about killing?
Why, here. News of death come quick like death come. What you want?
We want you to tell us where Lee is.
Not to.
We want to help him.
Police will come soon, Kuan Yin. All people think Lee kill man. We hide him.
Police? Come here?
Very soon.
You come.
All right. He shuffled ahead of us, leading us from the dim main room into an even dimmer hallway in the rear.
Lee Chen Si, to tell you to another year.
Dai, what else? Yi Shung, Nani Chu.
Then a man what?
Ah, Cheng Shao Mani Jian.
Go there. He opened door.
Thanks, Kuan Yin. If police come, you talk loud. Huh? We hear, then we go.
Oh, yes, I do.
Good. Come on, Red.
Yeah. That is close enough. Who are you?
Put the gun away, Lee. This is Red Gallagher, and I'm Phil Carney. We sailed for Nanhua's father.
Oh, Captain Carney and Mr. Gallagher. Nanhua has told me about you. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Come into my hiding place.
Come on, Red.
I am, as you Americans say, on a bad spot.
No, I've been on worse ones myself.
We're going to see what we can do to get you off of it, Lee.
I'm glad there are at least three people in Singapore who think that I didn't kill...
Hold it, Yung Lang. It's the police.
Police here?
They didn't give us much leeway. They must have followed us.
Is there a back way out of here, Lee?
Yes, through the window to a roof below and then to the ground.
All right, go ahead. We'll follow you out and talk later. All right, go ahead, Red.
I've had lots of practice with windows, Skipper.
Yeah, sure. Lee Chen Si not only knew the way, but he knew the neighborhood like a tramp puppy. We paralleled Tanglin Road, but held to the middle of the block, cutting through yards, vaulting fences, invading lots of privacy.
Lee, go on. We don't want anything but
I'll quiet with him. When we traveled seven or eight blocks and were down toward the Singapore River, we stopped. Lee led us through a narrow doorway and into a room in which a few Chinese sat, some with glasses and bottles, some with newspapers. We slid into a curtained booth and sat down.
Well, nobody will follow us. We can be sure of that.
Are you safe here, Lee?
For a little while, I think.
No. All right. Do you know who killed you, Ling?
How can I say? I wasn't there.
But you have a good idea. Is that what you mean?
With my stupid threat spoken in front of some who were friends and some who perhaps were not, I gave anyone who wanted you long dead a good excuse to kill him.
Yeah, you sure did.
Well, that jealousy motive's been overworked, but it's always good. Are you in love with Nanhua, Lee?
Yes, sir. We had planned on marriage ourselves before she was forced into this one.
Forced into
it? Yes.
I gave her the chance to tell me about it tonight, but she wouldn't. What is it, a matter of face?
Yes. Without his knowledge, a great deal of smuggling is being done in her father's organization.
In Kang's China Traders?
Yes. Yu Lang, who was a very ambitious man at best, took Nan Hua one night and showed her. He said he would expose it and ruin her father unless she married him.
And she went through with it without saying a word to her old man, her father? But if Kang wasn't in on it, I don't see what difference it would have made.
Because you're not Chinese, Mr. Gallagher.
Huh? Oh.
To be exposed like that would have caused such a loss of face that he would have been ruined. For the same reason, I cannot tell the police, no matter what happens to me, because of what it would do to Nan Hua's father. It has to be a confession.
Yeah. But why was Yu Lang killed, Lee?
I think because the man who was actually hiding the contraband goods in Kang's shipments was frightened because Yu Lang knew the truth.
Do you know who that man is?
I can only suspect.
Ralph Clayton?
I know only what Nan Hua told me about Yu Lang.
Yeah. Tell me, Lee, what kind of a rifle do you have?
Why, it's an American rifle. A Winchester, 38 special. Why, Captain?
That's the weapon that killed Yu Lang. Where is it?
It would take a very good friend to believe this, I'm afraid, Captain.
Hmm?
My rifle disappeared 2 days ago.
Yeah, I see what you mean. With everything else, a disappearing murder weapon is a little tough to swallow. Red and Phil.
Oh, come in. What has happened? Where is Lee?
We took him down to the Queen. He's locked in the cabin.
Locked in?
Yep.
Your boy is in such a bad spot that we don't know whether to feel sorry for him or keelhaul him.
What do you mean?
He doesn't mean anything. Where does Lee live, Nanwa?
Why, Phil?
We want to go over there.
On Silitar Drive, just this side of the bridge. The number is 742. His is apartment 20 at the top of the stairs.
All right, we'll be back, Nanwa. Stay awake, will you? Noise, but this door's in the way. Let me assure her.
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
Let me look at that, Skipper. Spring lock in there. Sure. Japanese made. It's a knife blade job.
Yeah?
Yeah, this'll do it. Oh, stand on a light a minute, will you?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You know, someday, Gallagher, I'm going to ask you about your past.
Pure spindrift, Skipper. I learned this from having such bad luck losing keys.
I'll bet.
Well, what are we looking for?
Evidence. Any and all kinds. Red.
Huh?
Look at here.
What do you got, Skipper?
Here. It was behind the clothes in this closet. A Winchester rifle, 38 special.
Lee didn't make that murder weapon disappear for long
enough. Wait a minute, Red. If Clayton took it, he might have brought it back, you know.
Yeah, maybe he didn't take it. I'm thinking we got two men with three motives. Lee might have dreamed up that story of his to frame Clayton, you know.
Yeah, that's right, Red. Seven. Check the windows, will you?
Oh, yeah.
See if there's another way to get in here besides that door.
These windows open out onto space as far as I can see. Yeah. Now, the door's at Skip.
And this must be the rifle. There's one gone out of the magazine. Okay, Red, let's go back to the house where the shot was fired. I still want to talk to old Cole Feng and see what we can pick up. We didn't pick up anything from Cole Feng. He was dead from a knife wound. He was lying in the middle of a badly furnished library. His pockets were pulled inside out. The room itself had been searched, too.
I don't like this much anymore, Skipper. It's getting late.
I'm with you on both counts.
Was this guy here when you came into the house before?
I wish I could tell you, Red, but I can't. I just came in and went upstairs. I didn't look in here.
So what do we do with Nan Hua's boy?
Huh? Well, leave him where he is. So far, he's ahead in my book by one empty cartridge case.
That isn't much of a lead.
Well, there might be more. Let's go and find out, huh? All right, now listen, Nan Hua. I want you to get a story across to Ralph Clayton and your father. Is Clayton still here?
Yes, Phil. What story?
That you've gotten a message from Lee. He's been drinking. He's losing face by hiding, and he's gone back to his apartment and is going to give himself up to the police in the morning.
He is not, Phil.
The story, Nan Hua. In the morning, he's going to tell the police everything he knows about what's going on behind your father's back.
Phil.
But don't use the word smuggling.
Then you know. You will not tell anyone. It would ruin my father. You know what that would mean.
I don't know anything, Gorgeous. I'm just guessing. You tell that story and maybe nobody will have to tell anything else.
Skipper, sometimes I get a little disappointed in you.
Yeah, Red? Why?
Because sometimes you aren't open and above board about things. If you think somebody's guilty, why don't we go get him and knock him around until he says yes? That always works if you're patient.
Brutal method, Red. Dull and uninteresting.
I don't know.
This way we're hanging everything on two very small items. First, that empty cartridge case. Doesn't seem to me that anyone would eject that thing from a lever-action rifle unless he wanted to leave it. Why?
To frame somebody else. Yeah, but did you ever figure that it might have taken two shots to drill that guy?
Gallagher, you're insulting. Of course I did.
Huh?
I counted the slugs in that rifle. You were there. One fired.
Yeah.
Item two, a key to Lee's apartment used to swipe the rifle and to plant it in the closet again. If somebody has it, he'll use it again to put Lee out of the way.
Yeah.
Item three.
Two is enough.
I just thought of this. Mm-hmm. Old Cole Feng's body and library were searched. Why? He was killed because I said I was going to talk to him, and he was searched for some dough. Paid him for the use of that room with the view of Yu Lang's forehead.
So we wait in the apartment, underhanded like. What do?
You hide in the closet.
Hide? Now, wait a minute.
Be on hand in case I need you. I'm going to be reeking of liquor, passed out on Lee's bed.
Well, I won't say anything about you being more at home than I'll be. Now, what'll you be wearing?
Brass knuckles, Red. But look, if Clayton's innocent, he won't even show up. You see?
Yeah, underhanded.
Underhanded, nothing. The whole thing depends on him. If he doesn't want to come, he doesn't have to. We splashed enough liquor around Lee's apartment to make it smell like the scene of a 3-day binge.
Oh, such a waste.
Then Red went into a handy closet, leaving the door just ajar. I climbed into Lee's bed, turning my back to the room to give a knife wielder a good target. It didn't occur to me that he might be a knife thrower until I heard the door ease open and click shut. Then I had to force myself to lie still until I heard his footsteps enter the bedroom. Gave myself a count of five. Then I heard his breathing fade in as he bent over.
Hey, that's close enough! Stay!
I turned over, and as I rolled, I started my right for his chin.
Hey! Oh, listen. You can make a pigeon out of yourself if you want to, but do it where I can't watch it.
All right, all right.
He had you practically...
All right, never mind.
What'd you hit him with anyway?
Never give an underhanded guy like him a chance, Red. I told you what I'd be wearing, brass knuckles. Never go to bed in Singapore without them. Wasn't much left to be told after the police got through with Ralph Clayton. His confession about the smuggling saved Kuji Kang's face, and his confession of both murders lightened Nanhua's burden of widowhood and put Lee Chen Si back on the eligible list. The last time we saw them, Nanhua and Lee were holding hands, and Kang's arms were resting across both their shoulders. An odd finish for the wedding. But it looked like they'd have better luck on the one obviously coming up. We moved out of the harbor and found the wind.
Stand by to make sail!
It streaked in from down across the line, and our crewmen jumped to their stations to send up the sail at whistle for.
Stop it, chief! Make sail!
Eager arms and strong backs glistened in the sun, and the mainsail went up smartly and bellied out. The jib shot up. Swung out over my head and fought with the sheets that held it in place. The Scarlet Queen shook under the push of wind, then dug her starboard rail into the green turmoil she caused, lifted her port side shamelessly to sun and air, and leaned into her course up into the South China Sea.
Hey, we got a whopper. But she likes it, Skipper. She's flirting with it.
I guess it'll treat her right, Red. As long as we can hold our feet to the deck angle.
Well, I've grown lopsided learning to do it.
Yeah, I noticed. You have to fight to navigate a level street.
Oh, not every street, Skipper. Say, it looked like spring was blooming or something in Singapore, didn't it?
Oh, not in Singapore. There aren't any different seasons. They're all the same.
Skipper,
I'm talking about romance. Cupid.
Oh. Yeah, the name of the game. Nanhua and that Lee Chen Si.
Well, you got to blame it on something.
Yeah.
They're nice kids for land people.
Yeah, great.
I wonder where we'll be when they get secured.
I don't know. The farther, the better. But promise me one thing, Skipper. Don't ever take me to another wedding. This is the second one I've been to, and I don't like
them. Yeah? What happened at the first?
I got married.
Oh, Red, no.
Yeah. I was on a cod schooner then, fishing the Newfoundland Banks. I made one trip after the wedding, and when I come back, she was gone. And do you know what she left me for?
No. A desert prospector.
Worse? He rented canoes in Central Park. And after this one, no more.
I see your point.
Yeah. The little woman I got now is good enough for me. Just moving up into the China Sea and leaving you alone.
To the Queen, Skipper?
To the Scarlet Queen. Girl enough for us, our redhead. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry, The Catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Wind, fresh to moderate, sky fair, sea cresting with high cross swell. Mainsail and mizzen reefed, ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 25th, 1948, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. And that wraps this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.